This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wuhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But he's failed to uproot the oligarchs that monopolize much of the private sector. He hasn't addressed unemployment or inflation, the various things that harm the daily lives of Tunisians. And so in reality, he spent most of his first term ignoring the economy and just ramming through his political program.
That was Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Middle East Program, on how Tunisia's economy has deteriorated since President Kais Saied made a power grab in 2021. Details coming up. Also, Nigeria's president has fired 5 ministers and appointed 7 new ones in a major cabinet reshuffle. And protests erupted again in Mozambique after official election results were announced. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Mozambique's president-elect Daniel Chapo struck a conciliatory tone yesterday as he spoke after the results of disputed polls were announced, saying he wants to be president for all Mozambicans. He says he wants to engage in dialogue and conversation with the opposition and not through street protests. VOA Portuguese to Africa reporter Amancio Vilanculos is in Maputo monitoring the situation. The peace talks, Amancio, called by the president-elect, does not seem to have resonated with the opposition. What's going on today and what's the state of the country right now?
Well, thank you. Yeah, the country is still very tense. Like today, a group of Mozambican Muslims, often referred as Indian or Asian or of Indian or Asian origin, met into the street, which is unusual. This community never participate or they don't participate at all, mostly in political activities. But today they met into the street to protest against the election result, which shows also a support to opposition party here in Mozambique. And we have to remember that people are protesting mostly against the results. At the time of legal support of the Frelimo party, they questioned how the party got 7% in the presidential and also legislative elections. And also this demonstration, like I said, because of the election, and also members and supporters of the Podemos party are now saying that they doubt whether the killing of the 2 members of their party will ever be properly investigated. Opposition, in another point, never had a strong voice in the Mozambican parliament, so many people thought that this was the time that opposition can have a stronger voice in parliament, but comes out that the Frelimo party got most of the seats, like 78% of the seats in parliament. That's why opposition party are now saying that elections were rigged. Also, some other members of opposition party are calling for unity among those who are not in the government to fight against the rigging of elections.
So do you think, Amancio, these protests, they're becoming like a daily occurrence in Maputo? You think it will continue?
It will likely continue. We have to remember that Venancio Mondlane, the second most voted presidential candidate, he said that because Paul Gwambi and Evelyn Diaz were killed by unknown people, and those people, they used 25 bullets. He said that his supporters, his people, will be marching in the streets, will be protesting for at least 25 days to honor the lives of these young men who were killed last weekend here in Maputo. And this is already having an impact in business. Today, for example, we saw that most businesses are closed, even in the very posh areas. In the outskirts, people are struggling because they live in a gig economy, so they need to go to the streets to sell this and that, but now they cannot do that. But at the same time, they say they have the right to protest against this situation.
And lastly, Amancio, you just mentioned the ruling party Frelimo is enjoying an absolute majority in parliament after winning the concurrent polls. Still, President-elect Daniel Chapo faces a lot of challenges. A terror group affiliated to the Islamic State in Cabo Delgado province, thousands of displaced people from the province, Mozambique facing high levels of unemployment and hunger exacerbated by El Nino-induced severe droughts. So his Frelimo has a lot of challenges to actually overcome.
Actually, they have a lot of challenges, and that's one of the points that opposition parties saying, how come you win election while you've been having such a bad government with all the corruption? Because while El Nino are like natural issues, while floods are like natural issues, there's a lot of corruption issues happening in the country. So that's why many people, they doubt in these results of the election.
Let's wrap it up there.
Last night, Mr. Chapo says he's willing to have conversation, to talk with opposition parties to lead to peace. But that's again a contradiction, because as he says that, police are blocking people from manifestation, and if they make it street, police start firing tear gas.
So, Amancio Vilanculas in Maputo, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Nigeria's president has fired 5 ministers and appointed 7 new ones in a major cabinet reshuffle aimed at making his administration more efficient. The shakeup comes during worsening economic hardship and frustration in Africa's most populous country. Tinubu took office last year and introduced reforms meant to cut government spending and shore up dwindling foreign investments. But inflation rate is at 28-year high and the Naira currency is at record lows against the dollar. Tunisia's President Kais Saied has been elected to a second term following a month-long crackdown and string of arrests of his political opponents. In his inauguration speech, he called for a cultural revolution to combat unemployment, fight terrorism, and root out corruption. Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at Carnegie Middle East Program, discussed the study's findings with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
President Saied has largely ignored the economic crisis. And first of all, he has not taken any responsibility for its continued failure. His main focus has largely been on corruption, but he's addressed corruption by scapegoating others, such as sub-Saharan African migrants and speculators and other enemies that he's named and shamed. But he's failed to uproot the oligarchs that monopolize much of the private sector, and hasn't addressed unemployment or inflation, the various things that harm the daily lives of Tunisians. And so in reality, he spent most of his first term ignoring the economy and just ramming through his political program.
But what this cultural revolution has to do with unemployment?
The cultural revolution is just one more page out of a populist playbook in which, it's not clear what he's going to actually do to address unemployment. The things that he's put forward have no connection to unemployment whatsoever. It seems much more like a political way for him to go after more of the opposition and go after more of his political opponents than an economic program.
The study said that President Kais Saied has built his populist appeal on a public commitment to 2 principles: resolute opposition to an international monetary fund program in order to avoid austerity-related hardships and would cause the population to protest, and fighting corruption by compelling the corrupt business elite to relinquish its allegedly ill-gotten wealth through a judicial process that threatens business owners with jail if they don't accept. How did that policy contribute to the economic decline?
In both cases, Kais Saied has really not offered an effective alternative to the policies that have been put forward either by the IMF or in the case of corruption. He put forward this really bizarre law where he expects elected people who committed corruption to return funds to the state in exchange for amnesty. And in his mind, I mean, what he said is that this would net Tunisia around $5 billion, but that has not worked. No one has come forward. And in the case of the IMF, his government negotiated a staff-level agreement 2 years ago, but the power was in Kais Saied's hands, and he never signed off on it. And so, you know, it's understandable that he would not want to subject the Tunisian public, who's already suffering, to further austerity. He hasn't put forward a different option. You know, he's instead used the central bank to finance his budget deficit, which economists point to as very dangerous, and they would lead to further inflation and a further decline in the value of Tunisia's currency. And he's continued to take other steps to undermine the central bank's independence. None of this is actually helping the Tunisian people.
In the conclusion of the study said Tunisia is more likely condemned in the month ahead to choose between two painful options: resorting to restructuring of its debt or embarking on a path of austerity with IMF support. What is the likely option that President Saied could choose?
Not clear at this point which path he is going to take. You know, on the one hand, he has had a rift with the labor union over the past couple of months, who has been the main impediment to the IMF deal in the past. They've been really critical of him in the lead up to the elections. But that doesn't mean that he has changed his view and supports an IMF deal. However, you know, you do have the delegations in town right now for the World Bank and IMF meetings, and they claim that there is some sort of IMF deal still on the table. We also saw signs recently that Tunisia is going to double its internal borrowing in the 2025 budget. And so, you know, that's not a good sign. That doesn't look like these are, again, doing the things that are going to address the real challenges. I think the only thing we do know is that in his second term, Kais Saied can no longer afford to avoid dealing with the economy.
That was Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at Carnegie Middle East Program, speaking to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. Thomas Coelho, a mid-level commander in the notorious Lord's Resistance Army rebel group, was sentenced to 40 years in prison in Uganda today for committing war crimes. Coelho was convicted in August of dozens of charges, including murder, rape, enslavement, torture, and kidnap. It was the first time an officer of his seniority has been tried by Uganda's judiciary. Reuters reports that Coelho denied the charges. His lawyer, Caleb Alaka, told the court he would appeal the verdict and the sentence. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com, and there you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. When U.S. voters head to the polls on November 5th, they'll be choosing who controls the U.S. Congress, in addition to deciding former President Donald Trump or Vice President Kamala Harris will be in the White House. Whatever political party ends up controlling the House of Representatives or the Senate will be key to a new president's enacting his or her legislative agenda. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson looks at key races around the country.
Talk to voters and make sure they're voting all the way down the ballots.
Donna West, a longtime Democratic activist, does not just organize voters for Vice President Kamala Harris from her Las Vegas, Nevada garage. She says she is also fighting to make sure Democratic Senator Jackie Rosen keeps her U.S. Senate seat.
The more we can get out and talk to voters, the more confident I am that we'll restore Jackie to the Senate and take that majority.
Nevada is one of just a handful of U.S. states nationwide with competitive Senate races that will determine if Democrats or Republicans hold the majority. Democrats currently hold a slim majority with 51 seats. Rosen's challenger, Sam Brown, who was injured while serving in Afghanistan, says it is time for change in Washington.
We've got an economy to go square away. And look, there's things we can do, from the housing to our energy policy. Yeah. We've got to go after this border situation.
In Texas, traditionally a stronghold for Republicans, polls show a close race between Democrat Colin Allred and Republican Senator Ted Cruz. In their debate last week, Allred challenged Cruz on the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol.
This election is his accountability. You cannot just be patriotic when your side wins.
Cruz pushed back on that argument.
You don't hear him talking about the Antifa and Black Lives Matter riots that burn cities across this country.
And in the rural state of Montana, Democratic Senator John Tester faces a challenge from Republican Tim Sheehy. At the Democratic National Convention earlier this year, a delegate said that many voters in the state may vote for former president and Republican candidate Donald Trump, but will keep a Democrat in the Senate. Mary Jo O'Rourke is a Montana voter.
Senator Tester has delivered for us in terms of the farm bill, and we are way too smart to let that go.
But at the Republican National Convention, delegates said Tester's liberal voting record is not right for the state. Susan Renault is a Montana voter.
Tim Sheehy is a real veteran. He is a combat hero. He is a Navy SEAL.
Control of the U.S. House of Representatives could also potentially flip, moving from Republican control to the Democrats. All 435 House seats are up for re-election this year. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
As the U.S. presidential election nears, American students living in Senegal are closely watching the campaign, with some saying their experiences in Africa shape how they view events in the U.S. Reporter Wanaya Johnson-Sambu met with a group of American students in Dakar, Senegal, and spoke to three of them in this report narrated by Azuma Kampaore.
The U.S. presidential election is generating excitement among some American students living in Senegal, and despite being far from home, they say they remain interested in what's happening back home. Bridget Brown, a 22-year-old American student, says that living in Senegal doesn't affect her perspective as a U.S. voter. Instead, she feels that the distance allows her to more clearly assess which candidate is best suited for the role.
I think being here, it makes me realize how important it is that we have a president that cares about other countries, other cultures, other traditions, and especially in Africa. It's so important that we have kind of our best foot forward when we're engaging with other countries. So for me, I'm looking for a candidate that feels that way and kind of supports those ideas and will be kind of our best representation of the United States abroad.
Madeline Luther, a 20-year-old student, says she closely follows the debates and key issues raised by both candidates, former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. While living in Africa hasn't changed her perception of the election or her expectations as a voter, she says that the perspectives of others around her do have an impact.
Oh, it definitely could have an impact, but I wouldn't say yet that it's absolutely going to. I think anything anybody says, whether they're Senegalese or whether they're American, impacts the way that I think about things and changes the way that I might vote. Take into account everything that everybody says and what people think here about the candidates as well.
Eli Conrad Wolfsha, a 21-year-old student, says that while he is closely following the U.S. elections, his involvement is limited.
In the United States, I do a lot of interactions during the election campaign. Since I was very young, I worked for a lot of candidates, especially at the national level, but also at the state level. Here, I can't do that work, so I'm not very involved in the elections. But I watch and read the news every day to know what's happening in the United States, to be informed as possible before the election.
Regardless of their political affiliations, these three young American students living in Senegal expressed a strong sense of responsibility in the upcoming U.S. presidential election and a concern for the nation's role on the global stage. For Wahani Johnson-Sambu in Dakar, Senegal, Ozuma Kampaure, VOA Africa.
Kenya is hosting the Africa Football Business Summit to boost football and sports development across the continent. The summit focuses on ways African countries can benefit from the game's ever-increasing popularity. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
In recent international football tournaments, African teams have enjoyed unprecedented success. At the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, an African team, Morocco, reached the semi-final for the first time. Experts attribute that success not only to talent and hard work, but also to significant investment at the community level to nurture talent and produce more quality players. The Football Foundation for Africa, an organization that promotes investment in the sport, has brought together government officials, league representatives, and experts from Europe and Brazil to help Africa grow its football programs and reaping the benefits of the sport's popularity. The founder, Brian Wasala, told the gathering that Africa needs to take the game seriously since it can lead to economic prosperity.
It's high time football started to make social and economic sense, especially for the African continent. We keep boasting of our talent, we keep boasting of our youth, but when we look at football as an industry, do we really have an agenda as Africa? It's really high time that we took up ownership of this conversation, made it ours in order for us to progress as a continent.
The chairperson of the foundation, Mohamed Chidier, says there is a need to bring the game closer to communities. He believes it can keep children on the right path.
And we're trying to connect the dots in the entire globe to make sure that youth, wherever they are able to play football, pull them out of drugs, menace, make them physically fit and mentally fit, so that they become very responsible citizens.
That was a report by Mohamed Yusuf. And in studio with me, our VOA sports analyst intern, Omole Mokale. He is here to fill us on the NBA season and which sports events to look forward to watching this weekend. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Omolemo.
Thank you so much.
So let's begin with the NBA. What's been going on?
Well, a lot happened this week. We had the Memphis Grizzlies beat the Utah Jazz, and ending with just a two-point deficit. The Los Angeles Clippers also lost to the Phoenix Suns, and by in overtime, just by 3 points. But for the top NBA story of the week, on opening day, a historic moment took place in the Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Los Angeles Lakers regular season opener, where a father and a son, LeBron James and LeBron James Jr., a.k.a. Bronny, played in the same game, making this the first time ever to happen in NBA history. They won their game 110-103.
So now for the 2025 Men's African Cup of Nations qualifiers, which teams have qualified so far?
All right, everybody, listen up. So from our Group B stage, we have Morocco, and Group C, we have Egypt. We have Group E, Algeria. Group F, Angola. Group H, DR Congo. Group J, Cameroon. Group L, Burkina Faso and Senegal.
So how about this weekend? Any events you think we should look out for?
Yes, so we have the World Series starting today for an epic way to conclude the baseball season. New York Yankees face the LA Dodgers in a 7-game series, with the last game being Saturday, November 2nd. And we also have this weekend, we have the English Premier League. We have a great game Saturday, Manchester City versus Southampton. And on Sunday, we have Chelsea versus Newcastle, and a really big game, Liverpool versus Arsenal.
Wow. So VOA sports analyst, intern Omole Mokale, thank you for your input.
Thank you so much.
And with that, we will be wrapping up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.